Well, hi there. Welcome back. Welcome back to People Pleaser. Boy, it feels like it's been a long time since I've released a full episode of this show. It's really only been 2 weeks, but it feels like it's been at least a month. It feels like I just went away forever, but it's only been 2 weeks. But to me, I don't know if you guys feel that, but it feels like I really just went into a hole there. I gotta admit, the quarantine blues and the quarantine anxiety kind of got the better of me there, and I just needed to take a breather and take a seat and come back and gather my thoughts. But we're back with a really great episode. I'm really excited about it, and we're just going to get right to it. I'm not going to read any reviews this week, but just as a reminder, or maybe if you're new, a thing we do here, if you go to Apple Podcasts and rate this show 5 stars and leave me a review, I will read your review on the show and review you back. And right now I'm looking for new reviews. I think I only have like 3 left that I haven't yet read. So get on there, rate the show 5 stars, leave me a review. I'll read your review on the show and review you back. I just wanted to start off here at the very tip top and issue a few little disclaimers, a few warnings, some spoiler alerts. My friend John Lane came back. He's my first repeat guest. You might remember him from the episode Anger, episode 2. He's back. We did a little social distancing recording, and I think it worked out pretty well. Talking about free will and determinism, and because we're talking about that, we talked a lot about the TV show Devs that just finished its run on FX and Hulu. If you haven't seen Devs yet, you really, really gotta watch Devs. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's some of the best television I've seen in years. Alex Garland, who wrote and directed every episode, is just brilliant. He wrote and directed Ex Machina and Annihilation, and he's just got such a brilliant mind and such a great conduit for discussing these kind of high-minded, heady ideas of consciousness and existence. So if you don't want that show spoiled for you, if you have plans to watch Devs and you just haven't gotten around to it yet, just know that we do spoil a few things about Devs in this discussion. But if you don't really care, if you just want to get to the podcast and decide later on whether or not you want to watch Devs, since I believe that you are a free agent capable of making your own choices, go ahead and choose to do that. You know, do whatever you want. But I do just want to say that there's a spoiler alert for that, for Devs. Also, we talk a lot about the Matrix trilogy on this podcast. I mean, those movies are 20 years old, so spoiler alert, I guess. You know, I don't know. They're coming out with a new one in like another year, so if you haven't seen the trilogy and you don't want them spoiled because you want to catch up on the trilogy before the fourth one, I guess spoiler alert for the Matrix movies as well. Also, I've said this before on the show, but just a reminder, John and I aren't experts on free will and determinism or any such philosophy. We're just dudes who watched some things and read some things that made us think some things, and we're talking about those things now into your ear holes. That's all it ever is on this show. Sometimes I have people who are pretty qualified to talk about what they're talking about, but a lot of the time it's just people who have anecdotal experience and just strong feelings one way or another about something, or people who just want to work through their ideas on something, and that's usually what you're getting here. But that's all I wanted to say. Just some kind of, I guess, general content warnings before we head into this whole thing. And yeah, boy, it feels great to be back. I missed y'all. I hope you missed me. And here we go. What is free will, and do you have it? Whether it's been FX's incredible limited series Devs, or the musings of Dr. Manhattan in the Watchmen series, the third season of Westworld on HBO, or a revisiting of the Matrix trilogy, my media consumption the past few months has been rife with plot lines centered around the philosophical quandary of free will or choice and its place in a seemingly deterministic universe. I think it's important to first begin with the question of what is free will before asking whether you believe you have it. We should be specific about what we are actually talking about before considering whether it's something that even exists, right? I'm not going to get fancy with my definition of free will here. I'll just use the conventional definition most philosophers use when discussing this concept. Basically, free will amounts to the ability to have done anything other than what you did in any given situation. There are multiple options, and you, the decider, choose one. Now, most of us operate under the assumption that our daily lives are absolutely chock to the gills full of these choices. From the moment our day begins, we are choosing one snooze on the alarm or five. Which outfit to wear? Do we have time for a quick meditation before work? When should I call that person back that I forgot to call back yesterday? What should I eat, wear, listen to? The list goes on and repeats until we die. Now, hard determinism is essentially the idea that the feeling that we are choosing in these instances between multiple possibilities is actually an illusion. The reality hard determinists believe in is that our quote-unquote choices aren't actually choices at all. They're inevitabilities that arise out of external or internal prompts that we do not control. They're just programming. And maybe that sounds like a load of nihilistic garbage, but the logic is pretty sound. It stems from considering the known deterministic physical laws of the universe, which basically state that nothing happens without something causing it to happen. A ball doesn't roll unless someone or something acts upon it and makes it roll. Because of this, the entire universe, all that ever will be or ever has been, is all part of an unbroken causal chain that can be traced backwards or forwards, seemingly ad infinitum. This is the nature of all things. Asteroids hurtle through space, propelled by gravitational forces. They don't move simply because or for no quantifiable reason. All things occur as a result of some other thing occurring. Humans, being part of this causal law, should seemingly act accordingly. And hard determinists would argue that we absolutely do. Think about it. You only exist because your biological parents procreated. You didn't choose that. You didn't choose your genetic makeup, the place you were born, the people you went to school with, the food you ate as a young child. Basically, the question determinists want to ask is, if you're capable of choice, then where and when does the choosing actually begin? Even in the most random scenarios, determinism posits that your actions are all a result of programming. Even if you're taking a drive through an unknown neighborhood just to listen to some music and unwind, the choice of turning right or left at a stop sign is dependent on factors you probably aren't consciously aware of, factors you don't actually control. Going further, determinism states that once you turn right, that is the only reality that could have ever existed. The choice can't be made again or made differently, therefore it always was what you were going to do. It always will be what you did, and it is impossible for you to go back in time and choose to do anything else. If you could have made a different choice, you would have, but you can't, so you didn't. Seems like a trump card, but only if you don't recognize how circular the reasoning there is. See, believers in free will reject the idea that just because a choice was made, a different choice was never possible. They reject this idea because they believe that while the universe is definitely and clearly deterministic, and all things are definitely a result of the interplay between cause and effect, sentient, thoughtful individual beings like humans are a special ingredient in the cosmic stew called agents, who are endowed with the ability to create causal chains that wouldn't have existed otherwise. I have a theory on why agents in the Matrix movies were called agents, but I'll get to that later. Just remember, we're coming back to that in the outro. To determinists, all this magic human capacity for choice stuff is likely born from an inability to accept the simple truth that we are prisoners to causal chains we do not control. But just as I can see the sound logic behind the argument for hard determinism, I also think there's actually quite a lot to the argument for free will being a special component of the human brain. And not just because I'm a human and I want to feel special. But let's start with the simple example of a ball only rolling if it is acted upon by outside forces. Surely we can all agree that there is a great deal of difference between any sentient being and an inanimate object like a ball. So does that mean all living things are endowed with this cosmic power of choice? Do trees make choices? Do dolphins or chimpanzees or butterflies or bacteria? Or is it just humans? Again, determinists would say that by observing the animal kingdom, we see a much more strictly obeyed deterministic system, where animals simply know to migrate because it is baked into their DNA, the same way they know to do anything else instinctively, and that personal agency or choice is just not part of what we observe with other creatures, so why would we be any different? What would make us so special? And to that, I offer a simple rebuttal. I don't know what it is that made us this way, but I do believe that we are quite evidently different and quite evidently special. The same way a living thing is clearly separate from an inanimate thing, a human is clearly and demonstrably and immensely different from any other living thing we have observed. There is no other thing in existence that operates like the human individual. For evidence of our special ability to individuate and create causal pathways, look no further than our ability and capacity for creation itself. We create stories, paintings, music, structures, machines, all from nothing. We have the same instinctive evolutionary programming that monarch butterflies have that maps their migration path, but unlike the monarchs, we are capable of disobeying our evolutionary programming. We are capable of inventing different options for ourselves and creating our own means of experiencing existence. Simply put, we are capable of choice. Again, determinists would say we don't control the impulses and thoughts that give rise to our creativity, but I would argue that to separate us from our creative mechanism just because it seems that we are not consciously pulling the levers doesn't seem to make much sense. After all, if I'm not creating the melody I hear in my head when writing a song, who is? It's questions like these that have me uncertain of determinism as a hard and immutable reality of the human condition, and that get me so excited to talk myself blue to anyone who will have it out with me on this topic. Luckily, my friend John Lane happens to be a pretty convinced determinist, so he was willing to be my first return guest and debate the idea with me. Now, did we do this as free-thinking beings capable of adaptation, abstraction, individuation, and ultimately choice? Or did we do this because it was always what we were going to do according to the unbreakable causal map of the universe? Well, I guess that's for you to decide, if indeed you are capable of such a thing. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today my friend John Lane and I are talking about the existence, or lack thereof, of free will. Do we make choices, or are we just a result of cause and effect?
Oh boy, here we go.
Just starting from there.
Well, this has been a journey for me, getting to the point where I am today. It has been a really remarkable couple of years. I was Mormon for most of my life, and an idea that is based so heavily in the concept of free will. And now I've come around to the idea that I don't even think free will exists. And that has all happened within the last 5 years.
So your answer to the question right now is, no, we do not make choices.
No, we don't. I mean, it appears we do.
But you're certain of that right now.
Oh, God. I would never say certain. I would just say belief. It's where I've landed. It's like, well, I'm trying to figure out how the world works, just like anybody else.
And currently, what makes most sense to you is...
Is that there is no such thing as free will, mm-hmm. that we live in a deterministic reality where all that happens is essentially... the chemistry of our brains and the history that we've had that has helped shape that chemistry throughout our lives is interacting with new stimuli every day, where we have different interactions with different people, different things, opening a car door, putting on headphones, whatever. And we do those things in certain ways because of how it interacts with our chemistry. And most of the things that are in our head, well, I would argue all of the things that are in our head, we didn't choose. We didn't choose who our parents were. We didn't choose where we were born. We didn't choose the skin color we have. So where does the choosing actually begin?
When do we start becoming... So the two things that are at play in this this idea, that kind of in the philosophical battle over free will versus determinism, the two things that are at play are natural event causation and agent causation, kind of natural determiners and individual determinants or determiners, but event causation versus agent causation. And one saying event causation is just that it is just an unbroken chain of events that led to here.
Yeah.
And there is no tracking it unless you want to go all the way back to the Big Bang. And certainly something came before that that caused that. And it's all just been this unbroken chain of events that just one domino hits the next, hits the next, hits the next. And why would we be any different since we are participants in this physical universe? And we can definitely observe with just physical, inanimate things that they are deterministic, that the cup only has water in it if I put water in it, and the water goes away as I drink it. Water doesn't spontaneously appear in the cup. The cup doesn't decide whether or not it gets filled with water. I decide. But that's what an agent causation is you and I, as thinking, feeling, intelligent beings, have the privilege of being agents, and we can cause events to be that would not otherwise be without our intervention. But like you said, okay, if I'm an agent that makes choices, when does that begin? Because interestingly enough, I was raised Mormon too, and just like you, a big part of the Mormon plan is free will. Then when you step outside of that, you go, the funny thing is, I didn't really choose any of that.
No.
I didn't choose to be born in Salt Lake City, Utah. I didn't choose to be born to a line of Mormons that would essentially... I mean, sure, they said at 8 years old, it is up to you whether or not you want to be baptized, but like, is it really?
No.
And there's so much about that doesn't actually feel chosen. So where does the choosing begin if I am this...
And for me, this all this idea began unraveling when I started thinking about people with mental illnesses and the mental illnesses that we continue to discover.
Yeah.
Dyslexia was discovered in the late 1800s, and before that, we literally just thought people who couldn't read very well for that reason, were just stupid. And honestly, even after the fact, like in the 1950s, people who were diagnosed with dyslexia were still, as a culture, we still just considered them stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's clearly not their fault, we would never think that of somebody today, who suffers from something like that. But I just don't think, they didn't have a choice. They didn't have a choice.
I feel like we still kind of do though. Even though we still kind of are like, get over it. Like everyone's got something.
Yeah.
We've got so many, we're so inundated with stories of people overcoming their obstacle. My thing is popping like crazy, so I'm just going to turn my thing down. But we're so inundated with stories of people overcoming their difficulty that now we're sort of like, Yeah, okay, you have the thing that you didn't choose, but, like, everyone's got whatever their thing is, and if you want to be successful, you've got to fight through it, you know? You've got to...
Yeah.
And so that, so... Because I agree with you that it's, like, my experience... The big reason why people fight against this idea of determinism, I think, is because it feels like... I'm making choices.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm in control, and that's really kind of the biggest thing that people can't get around. But you can easily explain to someone something that they've experienced personally that doesn't feel like they're choosing, and that is mental illness, where it's like, when I have anxiety or when I have depression, if I could choose it away, I would.
Yeah.
If I could simply just choose to not feel that way, I of course would. And yet, I am just stricken with...
Which, that's a really black and white example. It's like obvious, like that's a very obvious example. But I feel like our brains are just filled with all kinds of more subtle examples of that keep us from going out. Like, you know, I had a bad experience throwing a party when I was younger. And so I haven't thrown a party... in years, even though I love parties, I love going to parties. And I, up till that bad experience of throwing a party, which it was really bad.
What happened?
So before I went on my Mormon mission, I threw a big party and it was great. It was a huge success. It was the first one I'd ever thrown and it was the best. It was so much fun. All of my friends came and had a dance floor, had a fire pit outside, had a movie going downstairs. It was just everything that you could want out of a party. And then I got home from my mission 2 years later and I wanted to have like a homecoming sort of party, similar sort of deal. And so I planned it and set up everything and invited everybody. And it wasn't that no one showed up. It's that one person showed up.
And almost would have been worse.
And I didn't know that person.
Were they a friend of a friend?
Yes.
And their friend that was your friend had told them, hey, we're going to this party, and then bailed.
Yes. That's who was at my party.
Oh.
It was a terrible experience.
I thought you were going to say something like, I got arrested, or like my parents, but it's like, it's just kind of a sadder.
Yeah, it's really sad. But it's rejection. Like, obviously that wouldn't happen again. Like, it was one of those things where there were several events happening on that same night in my friend group, and it just happened that everyone chose other things. And that's okay. It really sucked, but, you know, it was what it was. And now I, like, you know, I have a little anxiety about throwing parties or And so I don't throw them. And I want to, though. But it's like, you know, it's just in the back of my mind. And it keeps me from doing it. It's not like depression where it's like, oh, my God, I can barely exist, let alone go out with my friends tonight. You know, it's like, no, it's just, it's back there. And it's kept me from doing it for years. And someday I will overcome it. But, you know, it just hasn't happened yet.
So... the big thing that I always hear about this, that people, and you've said it to me, and I hear it all the time, is just like, you just said it. When does the choosing begin? Like what? Because I didn't choose who my parents were, or where I was born, or how much money they had when I was born, or like I didn't choose any of these things. So at what point do I start choosing? And that question just seems like, I don't know if I can find an answer to that. Like, because it seems like everything would still just be influenced by external forces, just like you just said. Am I choosing to not have parties, or am I not having parties because this thing happened to me that now prevents me from not having parties? But I like this delineation that I heard yesterday as I was looking through video after video after video on this topic, because it just has been dominating my media consumption right now between devs and Westworld and reading Watchmen and watching the miniseries that HBO did of Watchmen and all these things and things that I've grown up with, like The Matrix and all these things. It's like this seems to be dominating everything that I'm looking at right now, this idea of determinism versus free will. But one thing that I saw yesterday that I quite liked was, it was kind of like, everyone's always wondering, well, where does choice fit into the picture? And I can't see where it fits in. I can't see where free will fits into this chain of cause and effect, you know? But I think if you can find a realm where agent causation works in tandem with event causation, essentially, determinism just seems to suggest that everyone is a result of forces from Mother Nature and Father Culture. That, like, a mixture of just kind of the way the universe works naturally and the elements at play and the laws of nature and the way that things, the temperature in the room and the density of the atmosphere and all these things, and in tandem with Father Culture, just the way that your community and the way that the people around you and the events around you, it's all just a combination of those and nothing else. But our stories, the reason why it feels like we have choice is because our stories always involve a triad. And this is a Jordan Peterson idea that I heard. That's not mine, but I liked it a lot. Our stories have a triad where Mother Nature and Father Culture are interacting with the self. And that's the third component, is the person, the self. And these forces are very strong and they act very strongly on the self. Oedipus Rex would say that the self really is inconsequential, that no matter what Oedipus wanted, he was always going to kill his father and marry his mother. And doesn't matter what he wanted to do or what he tried to, how he tried to avoid it by leaving who he thought were his parents. They were just his adopted parents, but he thought they were his parents. He tried to avoid fate. Fate found him anyway. But I think what this introduction of the self, this kind of magic self would say is like, the forces of Mother Nature and Father Culture are, yes, very, 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 very strong, but the self still has power within that to operate individually and operate outside of it. And so it's kind of like being like, I am stricken with anxiety. I did not choose it. I wish I could choose it away. It doesn't seem like I can. I am stricken. But there are things that I can do as the magic self, as the third component, where I can individuate and I can push through that very difficult external pressure to have a panic attack. And I can use the mind over matter technique. And like, I can actually overcome that very difficult external pressure, that very difficult external force that is acting on me, that force that I did not choose, that is acting on me and wants me to have a panic attack and wants me to feel terrible. I can do difficult work of meditation or just like developing a process of overcoming that.
Yeah.
Through my individual power. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that's all in the future. That's all like decisions you're going to make in the future based off of past experience. So it looks like a decision, but it's like an animal, you know, a dog that gets kicked by a man and is now leery of that man and all men. You know, it's like it learned a lesson, and it's not like it's going back in time and blaming itself or blaming anybody for what happened. It's just like, oh, now I know going forward that like I need to be careful of these people. Like when you have severe anxiety and you realize it's ruining your life, in a similar way to that dog behaving so that, you know, it can be happy. It would think that it would be happier and more successful in the future without contact with people that look like that guy or whatever. But so in a similar way, it's like, well, moving forward, I don't want to live a life that's ridden by anxiety. I have done studies. I've studied and learned ways to overcome it in the future, and I will try my best. But all of those things will only add up to whatever they add up to in the exact moment that you make a decision.
But exactly. So how am I able to go, you know what? I don't like this. I don't like this thing that I didn't choose. And I don't like the state of being that I'm in. How am I able to effectively put myself outside of that position if I'm not able to act freely? If I am just only a result of the things that I did not choose, the circumstances that are acting on me, it feels like determinism would say, I have no choice but to just live with chronic anxiety attacks for the rest of my life. But if I am an independent agent who can choose, then I do have the choice to see that I'm being acted on by these external forces, and I can go, what can I do to make it more bearable? What can I do? And yes, I am making the choice to learn meditation or to learn to seek therapy or to go on a drug regimen. I am making that choice as a result of those causes, the external forces pushing on me, but I am making a choice. I am deciding to lessen their effect on my life and to individuate away from.
A choice between what?
A choice between just accepting it and just taking the pummeling from the external force.
How many choices are there?
Infinite.
Infinite. Are there really, though?
I mean, like, I can't choose to fly. I am bound by certain immutable laws of nature.
I'm talking, like, Sam Harris uses the example of, you know, close your eyes and think of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what comes to mind? Okay, The Matrix.
I was thinking The Matrix, too.
Yeah. We were talking about that earlier. And did other movies come to mind? Yeah, maybe. Maybe like two or three other movies. But what about the other movies? Why didn't those ones come into your mind? You have a catalog of thousands upon thousands of movies. Endless, it would seem, in your head. Movies that you've seen, movies that you haven't seen, that you've heard of. And even then, beyond that, is movies that you haven't even heard of that exist.
Yeah.
But why didn't you choose any of those? Why didn't they just pop into your mind? Did you choose to have the movies that pop into your mind? Probably not. I have a friend of mine who came at me against this argument. Because the argument being is that you didn't get to choose what your mind brought into your consciousness. Like it just appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was the result of both you and I thought of The Matrix because I had just said Matrix.
And I didn't choose for you to say that earlier.
Yeah.
It just entered into my head, not voluntarily, against my will.
Not spontaneously. You didn't divine it from nothing.
No.
And that's what people would say. Yeah, it's like if you're truly making a choice, then you are capable of just conjuring.
And I had a friend of mine who pushed back against this pretty hard, and I asked him for a movie, and immediately he was like, John Q, that Denzel Washington film.
And he's maybe trying to think of the most random thing he can think of.
No, it is a movie that deeply impacted him. He was like, and that's the reason I thought of it, is because it's a movie that deeply impacted me. And we had agreed to the fact that there is no going back in time and doing anything differently. That doesn't exist. It's an illusion. It's this silly thing that's programmed into humans where we think, yeah, if only I could go back and turn right instead of left. No, with the information you had at the time, you were always going to turn left.
And we know that because it's what you did.
It is what you did.
Because that's the funny thing is people are like, no, I surely could have done something different. It's like, but then why did you not?
Yeah.
Why?
Because of a lack of information.
Yeah.
And now you have more information, and now you can look back and be like, oh, dummy.
So,
you ignoramus.
So, this is where I think devs kicks ass, amongst so many other reasons, is it's so beautifully, I think the great philosophers throughout time, they're always known for, like, it like boils down to like one thought experiment that they came up with where they're like, I know how to disprove God. Here's the thought experiment that disproves God. And it's like, if God is all knowing and all and omnipotent and all present, then he can't allow evil into the world because he would have to stop it if he was omnibenevolent. So either God is not all good or God is not all powerful, in which case God is not God. God does not exist. You know, like they come up with these thought experiments, and devs has a great one, which is, okay, the universe is deterministic. We've been able to map through big data and quantum computing all the information in the known universe. And because we have all that information, we can unspool the thread backwards and forwards and show you pretty much all of everything. And because it's all just cause and effect,
I can, and I have all the information on the exact velocity that a marble was rolled at, and the temperature in the room, and the density of the marble, and the way that it bounced on the ground. I can give you the exact representation of how far the marble rolled, the speed at which it rolled, and I can roll that back and forward as many times as I want, and it will always be the same, because it's all just deterministic. Here's what Devs does so brilliantly, is then it goes, okay, that's given now. We know it. We have the machine. We can see forwards and backwards, and nothing changes. They have a couple scenes where they do this. One is the scene where Forrest asks Katie, are we magicians? And she says, no, we're not magicians. We've just kind of uncovered something that always was. We've not really changed anything. And he goes, but if I show you a rendering of you 2 minutes in the future and you fold your arms, and then 2 minutes in the future you say, I'm a magician, and you put your hands in your pockets, aren't we magicians? Haven't we just fundamentally altered the course of the physical universe? And she goes, she doesn't say that wouldn't happen. She just says, we're not magicians. The universe is deterministic. And she just kind of like leaves it at that. Yeah. But you can't help but think, but why, Katie? Why couldn't you put your hands in your... And then it shows a scene later on where Stewart shows people themselves a second in the future. And they can't not say the thing that they're watching themselves say. And it's fucking with everyone's heads because they're like, I don't like watching myself say that and then saying it a second delayed because I wish that I could not say it, but it's the thing that I want to say right now. And it's the thing that seems... So the thought experiment being, if we could build this computer that can show us forwards and backwards, and if you're right, there is no other choice you could have made. You had to turn left with the information that you had. We change it to now you have information of two seconds from now. Now you have unprecedented information.
Yeah.
You have impossible information now. If we introduce that, though...
Oh, man.
You're capable of making a different choice, are you not?
Yeah, I would agree. That's... I mean, not to spoil the show, but that's...
Oh, I'm going to give a spoiler warning in the intro that we're going to talk about this show.
Great.
But I'm like, that's the great thought experiment of that show. Because Alex Garland is a determinist. And he believes in determinism. But in his show, he's like, but if there was this machine...
Oh, it would change everything.
It would...
But it would still be... You know, it would... But then you would make a choice that... I mean, that machine, to me, just could never exist. Because...
But that means that you are capable of making choices. If you are, if showing you information from the future could alter the choice that you would make, it means that you are capable of making choices.
But it's, you're just going off the belief that this is actually the future.
But exactly.
It's not, it's like, yeah, in theory, all of our theories are saying that this is the future. That's not saying it is the future.
But that's, so I think that, so devs, all devs can do is really render a very, 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 very good guess of what will happen based on all the factors taken into account. Based, and when I say all the factors, I mean all the factors, because devs knows all of them. It has all the information that it could possibly need to make an accurate prediction of what will happen next. But what the triad theory would say, where it's not just Mother Nature and Father Culture, there's the magic self, the magician, the agent. We are agents. We are thinking, breathing, individual agents. What that would say is that even with all the given information in the universe, there is still the possibility that the person will just choose something else.
Yeah.
Will just deviate from the best possible guess of what they should do based on all the factors that are... Because you're saying that, rolling it back, you only could have turned left because of the information you had. You didn't have... But if you can also roll it forward, it seems like you could show that there actually is a possibility of saying... The highest likelihood was that you were going to turn left. The highest possible likelihood with all the information that you had is that you were going to turn left, and that turning left, it's so likely that it almost seems like there's nothing else you could have done. But the self being this magic little thing is like, I could have turned right though, you know? And it's kind of like this. It's like, Because it is hard to say that things could have happened other than the way they did. Because it's like, well, if they could have, why didn't they? But I don't think that everything that could potentially happen necessarily needs to have happened. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, just because something could possibly happen doesn't mean that it...
Needs
to happen.
Where does need come into?
Exactly.
Like, that... I don't know. If you did... I don't understand how someone can become an atheist and not a determinist. Because that's the need. What does need mean? Need doesn't mean anything.
Well,
need is like, oh, there's somebody who has a plan up above, and this needs to happen in order for that plan to keep going forward.
No, exactly. I don't think there is a need for anything to happen.
Okay.
And what I'm saying is, I think the best proof of determinism is being like, look, you think you could have chosen other choices than you chose, but like, if you really could have, you would have.
Yeah.
And that seems to say like, but in any given moment, there's only one thing that I actually will wind up doing, but that doesn't mean there's only one thing I could do. There's one thing so winding the clock back, it's like, what I did choose was to turn left. I could have chosen to turn right. I did choose to turn left. I can't change that. We can't change what I did do. But just because I only did do one thing doesn't mean there isn't a multitude of things I could have done. Because like right now, it's like I could choose to pick up my microphone and hurl it at your head. There's so many reasons why I won't. I won't do it. And so you could argue you won't do it because there's absolutely because you actually can't. And I'm like, I'm bound by the reality of like the circumstances compelling me not to do it.
But then
I could.
But if you were a person that was easily antagonized, like if you could get really angry by the fact that I just keep poking at that,
yeah.
Like no, you couldn't, and then you do, and it's like, see, and it's like, well. You couldn't have 10 minutes ago when I started poking you about this, but because I introduced this new stimulus into your brain that boiled the water.
This is the conversation about reasons where it's like,
oh, yeah.
Does anything happen for no reason? You know, and she tries to argue.
That one really fucked with me. That one really, that I wasn't, because I had kind of thrown reason to the wind. I was like, no, it's all, like, nothing has a purpose. Really, purpose was what I threw, and reason had kind of snuck out with it.
Uh-huh.
But it's, you know, it's like, no, things just happen, and we get to decide what has meaning and what has purpose, and
but a cause is an effect, or is a reason for an effect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So that is different. And hearing them describe that in the third to last episode, I think, was illuminating. Everything has a reason.
She goes, I didn't say, does anything happen for a good reason?
Yes.
I said, does anything happen for no reason?
Oh, so good.
Because it wouldn't necessarily take me being antagonized for me to throw my microphone at your head. I could just do it to prove the point that I'm capable of it. I could just do it just to go, I'm going to do a thing that all rational thought would suggest I shouldn't do, and that there's really no good cause for me to do. But then the reason would be, I'm doing it to make a point.
Yeah.
I'm doing it to make a point about my ability.
It's just insane that there are, like, you know, I have a window next to me. I could jump out of it. I could break through and jump out. I could, right? Couldn't I? Isn't that an option? I could run over to my refrigerator and open the door and empty it and just, I don't know. You could do all kinds of things. Like, you literally have infinite choices, right? But but you won't do any of those things. Are they really choices? What you're getting at with reason, sorry, I kind of... Well, I just thought about what you were saying about throwing the microphone and like how people of a religious mind who think that there is some God who has bestowed upon us free will, they think that all of those things are legitimate options for anyone to do. When I just part ways from that, I just don't think that.
Well, the external forces are so great that you're right, I won't do it.
Yeah.
Like, I have so many things at play informing the choice that I'm making to not do it and to just continue having this conversation with you.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many external forces at play and help that you, that I think that's what leads people to going, I'm not really making the choice. I'm just behaving according to all of the complex data that's feeding. But it's like, the point of the thought exercise is to say, just because there's a reason why I'm choosing what I'm choosing doesn't mean that it's impossible for me to make a different choice. Just because I have all of this data feeding my decisions, the reason I'm choosing not to throw the microphone, the reason why you don't choose to jump out the window, the reason why you don't choose to empty your fridge, there's all these reasons why you shouldn't do those things. But that doesn't mean that it's still not
a, so, I feel like you're saying that, like, someone's inability to predict what someone else is going to do perfectly is the reason why that free will could exist. It's like,
exactly.
I can't predict what you're going to do. And that isn't the point. Like, of course you can't. I don't know what's going on inside of your head. But that doesn't mean, like, you know, people who make that weird decision at the end of, like, all of this debating and they go that way, they make that choice. It's like, what? But, you know, at the end of it, it's like maybe there was the pressure of everybody thinking they would go one way and then they decided to go the other. And it's like, okay, I couldn't predict that they would do that because it doesn't make sense. But there is a reason, and that doesn't mean that the other way was even really a choice at the moment of decision. At the exact moment of decision. Now, when you're sitting back and looking at your life ahead of you, like, oh man, I have so many options. Like, I have so many things to do. Like, when you're trying to pick a major in college, that's not a great choice. I don't know. Like, when a choice is far off in the distance, it feels like you have options. It feels like you can go in any number of directions. And yeah, you could. You could potentially, from where we're sitting, go in any number of directions. But when it comes to the exact moment where you have to press the button, where you have to play the guitar, the string, when you have to, you know, actually make the thing happen, there is only one way in that exact moment it was ever going to go.
See, and that's what I was talking about with the idea of, like, because you chose what you chose, that's the only way that you ever could have done it. It's like, no, that's the only way that you ever did do it.
Yeah.
And there's a delineation in my mind between what is possible and what is. Because it's like, yes, that is what you chose, but that doesn't mean that that's the only thing that you could have chosen. It means it's... And even being able to tell you exactly why you made the choice, even being able to go, I'm going to break down everything that went into that decision, all the information, it's like, cool, but that doesn't mean that I was left with only that choice. It means that with all the information that I had and all the factors that went into it, I made the most likely choice. I made the choice that made the most sense. And that's why a computer could be made that could make a hell of a prediction, that could be like, If I've got all the big data, all the data on you and your entire life and your entire lineage and all of your ancestors, I'm gonna be able to make a hell of a prediction on what you're gonna have for lunch today, and it down to really minute stuff like that, and it's like, and it might be right 95% of the time, might be right 99.999999999% of the time, because it's got so much information that, but it's like, and so this is where people. Because they're like, I don't see where the choice fits in. Because I can break it all down and tell you exactly why everything happened. And just like you just said, in that moment, in that infinitesimal moment of decision, because you choose the thing you choose, that's the only thing that ever could be, because that's what is. But it's like, just because that's what I did do doesn't mean I couldn't have done something else. Doesn't, you know, it is the reality of what happened. But that does not necessarily mean that I couldn't have done something different. And the thought experiment, the reason why I think it's a good thought experiment to go to prove this is, if you could show me in the future how that decision would affect me, and like if you could show me a rendering of what it is that would do, I would be able to decide whether or not I want that outcome. Now you're giving me information that's impossible information, but I think we could both agree that this machine could create a very good representation of what that decision would likely do if it had all the information. You know what I mean? So it's like, hypothetically, this thing exists. We're finding room in there, I think, for the deviation. We're finding that room for like the and I think that like there has to be a difference between agents and inanimate things. Like a baseball has no thought or feeling about flying through the air on its way to a home run or being in a city dump. It's that doesn't make a difference to it. It's not a being with an experience.
Yeah.
So this is the other thing that I think is kind of magical about living beings and beings with minds and seemingly autonomous beings is like our subjective experience and our observation of the world is what gives it any kind of function whatsoever. Without us, we are things that are acting on things like baseballs and things like that. Without us, things would only be acted upon by Mother Nature. We are literally Father Culture. So like, and then we're made up of little teeny, teeny, tiny individuals who create that giant mass that works in tandem with Mother Nature. It's all still very causal and there's still causes for everything. But like the magic of us is our ability to experience things and to, it's tree falling in a forest with no one around. It's like truly for the sound to exist, it needs to be observed. Otherwise it's just.
Huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think this goes back. This is another thing that Peterson talks about where he's like Harris's conclusion of that thought experiment of name a movie is you don't actually conjure anything into being. What Peterson would counter with is, well, we don't know nearly enough about consciousness or the human brain to make that determination. We don't know nearly enough about the complexity of the human brain to know that it can't, that it's not capable of spontaneously bringing thoughts and ideas into being. You know, we just don't know enough about it.
That's why it's a belief.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
it's got a hell of an argument.
It does. Mm-hmm. And that's why I believe it. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes the most sense. And, you know, I talk to people that get frustrated with the idea and they're like, why does it matter? Why is it important? And the reason why it's important to me, I don't know, growing up in Mormonism contributes to this idea, but also just I heard this saying once when I was a kid that the people that know the how or are only interested in knowing the how will always work for the people who know the why.
What does that mean?
So the people who are only concerned with like how something works, it's like, I should have a better example. I'm only concerned with how to clear the tables at the restaurant I work with.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really care about why. I don't really have this big, like, you know, it isn't about the why for me. It's like, why? Okay, so more people can sit and I can make more money. Sure, whatever. But I'm always going to be working for the person at the top who had the idea of, like, why does this restaurant exist in the first place? Like, I have this creation that I want to share with people and a passion and a drive that comes from the quote-unquote why, that the people that just care about how, you know, it doesn't matter as much to them. So they won't take it as far as I would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the person, like the songwriter in a band is kind of the why, and the guitarists, or the other instrumentalists are kind of more a part of the how. Like, how do we make this into a song? Whereas, mm-hmm. like, you know, that's not a great example either. Anywho.
Are you saying basically that latching on to a philosophy or an ideology like this is trying to get at a why?
Yeah.
Just like, why did things happen the way they happen?
Why do things happen the way they happen? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with Mormons, Mormons are obsessed with knowing things. And that was a big stumbling block for me while I was a Mormon. They know everything. It is impressive.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then it's like, where does faith fit into this? Believing something without seeing it.
Supposed to be like a
something
challenge?
Something you don't know?
Yeah. Like something that you're like, that you really, really, really believe. And that you believe so strongly that you're willing to devote your entire life to it. But that you believe in spite of a complete lack of evidence.
Yes.
And like, that's supposed to be like the impressive thing of it. But it's like, if you just were like, oh, I'm certain.
I know.
Like, I know so strongly that I will never, ever, ever doubt how strongly I know this. It's like, well, then you're not truly but I think that that's a linguistic failing of people. I think that they use the word know, and what they mean is, I believe so strongly it feels like a certainty.
A great failing indeed.
It's a linguistic failure.
That is what began the end of my time as a
I think it does
Mormon.
For a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you're claiming to know something that's definitionally and purposefully unknowable.
Here's the problem, though, is that it's such a linguistic failing to the point where the church now, I don't want to like just drone on about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but the church now is so solidified in quote-unquote knowing things that there is no room to entertain any other idea.
Yeah.
Outside of it. Like, they say that they're interested in other truths. Like, every religion has truths and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, it's like, no, they know. But they all have truths and parts of it, but we know. We know the whole thing. And it doesn't really change much. The early days of the church were actually, you know, there was a tremendous amount of change. It was the prophet could change things from one day to the next. And depending on what they knew and understood and, you know, claim to receive from God, it was this ever-changing thing. But, you know, as it's gotten so big, it's kind of solidified into what it is now. I love the idea of belief. Like, it is the why behind my life. Like, I believe in determinism.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't something that's static. It isn't something that just is concrete. It's very flexible. And like, I learn new things every day. I see things, I feel things. And I'm just like, oh, that's going to change the way I operate just a little bit. And so I don't go into determinism thinking that I know, because I just don't. And it's that kind of, you know, steadfastness to an ideology is, I think, unhealthy. But it does give me a why to explain why I shouldn't be so hard on my past self. Like, I only had the decision I was ever going to make when I got mad at that driver who cut me off because of a whole long list of reasons, you know?
So that's a big issue that I think a lot of people have with determinism right there that you're illustrating right now. I think people like it for the reason you're saying is like, oh, it allows me, it gives me a structure in which I don't need to be so hard on myself. But I think that's a big problem that people have with it is like, what does this do to accountability and moral and ethical responsibility?
Oh,
because if I could only have ever behaved the way I behaved, how can I truly be responsible for my actions and accountable for them? How can I hope to apologize to someone or to like make something up to someone if it's just kind of like, I just did the only thing I could have done. There was no other option. Like that. Like, sorry about it, but like, if I could have not murdered your family, I would have. But I had to, and it's like, well, no. There has to be a world in which you did not have to kill my brothers and sisters and my mom and dad.
Like, but that's not the world we live in.
But so people don't like it because it's like, well, how am I supposed to?
Yeah. Where's the justice?
Get
and
any kind of closure?
Yeah.
When someone wrongs me, or when I wrong someone else and I want to be held accountable, how can I be held accountable to anyone or anything for anything that I do? If
by behaving differently in the future. I don't know. I've always thought, a friend of mine a couple months back showed up to a group meeting, and he'd just gotten into an accident on his way to the group. And he just like took a corner too hard, getting onto a freeway, and slid off the road and bumped into the guardrail. He was fine. The car was fine. He was able to drive the rest of the way. And then at the end of the meeting, he was about to leave, and everybody was telling him like, oh, well, be careful. And I had the thought like, I don't think there's someone in this room I would trust more to drive with than that man, because he was so conscious now. He wasn't paying attention before. Mm-hmm. He's going to pay attention now.
Yeah.
He's going to behave very differently moving forward. And I feel like that's, if we treated crime that way or mental illness that way, well, mental illness is actually the variable in all of this. It's very difficult to understand. But, you know, if we treated people's actions in that way, it's just like, oh, they've learned their lesson. They don't want to do the thing that they did.
But see, that's the problem. And again, this is what I think makes people and myself think there must be some element of individuation and agent causation going on here, because the things that I feel the most guilty for and the most shame about, now, I think everyone feels a certain amount of shame or guilt for things that they really didn't control, and things that, like, that's stuff that people work through in therapy, where it's like, you didn't molest you when you were a kid. Like, you didn't, yeah, you didn't do that. That happened to you and you are not responsible for that. But the thing that I get the most twisted over is decisions that I make and actions that I take that are contrary to things that I know and things that I believe, where I'm like, I think it's a little bit of a cop-out for people to just feel like, look, I know I cheated on my partner, or I had an affair, but like, I only was acting on information that I had at the time. And now that I know how much my actions hurt my family and my partner, I wouldn't do it again. But it's like, surely you knew when you were doing it that if you were to ever be caught, it would be very hurtful to the people. Like,
yeah.
I do things all the time where I'm like, I can't say I didn't know at the time that what I was doing was going to hurt that person's feelings. I behave in ways all the time where I'm like, I knew as I was doing it. I had a voice in my head before I made the choice that said, don't do this, you're going to regret it. And I went, fuck off, here I go. Yeah. And then I did it. And as I was doing it, the voice went, oh no, please stop. Dear God, please stop. And I went, fuck you, here I go. And then at the end of it went, holy shit, despite all,
yeah,
knowledge, and despite the way I really feel I did that thing, which could be a argument for determinism, that it's like I just had no control over myself at that, yeah, time, but it could also be an argument for the fact that it's like, despite all the information that I have and all the best reasons in the world not to act a certain way, I individuated and I was rebellious and I acted in a shitty way, even though I knew that it would have negative repercussions. And therefore, I feel accountable. I feel like I used my precious gift of agency and my precious gift of choice making to make a hurtful choice. And all of the external forces in this instance were saying, don't. We're saying, don't do that. It's going to hurt you. It's going to hurt the person that you're doing it to. It's like, you're not going to like the way you feel afterward. All the external forces were saying, don't make this choice. And I made it anyway.
Yeah.
And so, again, we have the interplay of the external forces with the agent causer, me being the agent. And so that's where I'm like, I think people are like, no, I want a methodology of being held accountable. I want a way to go, I knew better and I did it anyway. You know, I knew enough about drunk driving and the effects of it not to drive drunk, and there I
but
was
you
anyway.
Didn't.
I mean,
I don't think you did.
I got a DUI and I continued to drive drunk for like 3 or 4 years after the DUI. It's like I had more than enough information. I had more than enough information.
No, you didn't.
Didn't I?
No.
You don't,
because otherwise you wouldn't have done it. If you really had enough information, if you had literally, I mean, what, but the question is like, how much is enough? we put that on other people, like, well, they should have known, right? Like, they've gone through all of this, like, they should have known not to do that.
But surely if you asked them, they'd be like,
oh, sure.
I do know.
Sure, yeah.
I know it's wrong.
Not enough.
I knew it was wrong while I was doing it.
Not enough. Not enough.
But I'd, yeah.
In combination with what's going on in your head, like,
that's
the actual chemistry, it's like, no,
yeah.
Obviously it wasn't enough.
That's one of those things like mental illness, like depression and anxiety, that's always felt to me very like I'm being acted upon, because when I'm in the act of doing something that I know I don't want to do, it feels like there is no force on heaven or earth that can stop me. And it just feels like later I can sit there and go, why in the fuck did I just do that? And I can't, and I can try to think of like all the different but it's just kind of like, I even as I was doing it was thinking, stop.
Yeah.
Stop speaking. Stop saying the words that you're saying right now. Stop doing what you're doing. And I couldn't stop myself. And I don't think people I think people get mad about that because they're like, well, it sounds like you're abdicating responsibility. And it really does. And it sounds like you're ditching the like what you have to do is say, I did that. And I knew I shouldn't have, and I did it anyway. I knew that cheating on my wife was going to break up my family, and I did it anyway. Absolutely, there's external forces, but also in that, in order for me to, for my worldview, in order for there to be room for me to truly take accountability and grow, which is, I think is what you're doing when you're saying, the way that you do it is you just behave differently in the future.
Yeah.
But in order for you to be able to do that, there has to be some part of you that's capable of individuating, that's capable of looking at something and going, I'm going to go easy on myself. That was a combination of a lot of factors that weren't all just me, but there's also part of me in there that I think can behave better, that I think I can take actions to improve. And yes, that choice to improve is also influenced by the factors of having the experiences that you've had, but there's still you who is capable of taking the action to improve or not improve. There is still the individual
in the infinite ways that there are to improve.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so
I didn't have to choose Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't really choose it. It was just like someone sent me to a meeting and I walked in and I was like, oh, I'm in AA. And I was just like mad that I was there.
Yeah.
And it just started making sense to me. But it's like, it could have been a yoga retreat that someone sent me an invitation to. It wasn't. And like you've said earlier, it would have been something else if it had been, but it wasn't. So it is only what it could have been. But I would say,
I just leave. I like what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
That there is so much mystery to unlock in our brains that we don't understand.
Yeah.
And so from where I'm sitting, determinism makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like the lack of, like, I don't see enough evidence for free will in my experience to make me believe in it. And it makes me, I think, a kinder person to the people around me. I don't, you know, and to even to the most heinous criminals, like the worst people in the world, it's like, well, I don't believe that they were that way when they were babies. And I don't think that they chose what they were born into. I don't think they were even, I don't even think it was a choice what they were allowed to get away with leading up to that point.
And I think that there's, I think that there's room for both. I really do think there's room for exactly that kind of empathetic look at a person who has committed many wrongs and done great, social crimes and things that we look at as horrible, reprehensible, unforgivable things, and to look at it with an empathetic view of, look, there's a lot of things going into the choices that they made that have nothing to do with them, and things that they, and so, and there's room for, but at the end of the day, they're still an individual with the ability to
see. Here's my thing. Here's where that lands is, do they have the capability to move forward and not make those choices in the future? And if those choices are bad enough, like murder, and if it's like, okay, we've determined that this person with what's going on in their brain, which I don't think we can do yet, they can't exist in our society without murdering people. So they can't be allowed to be in the rest of society. And it's not like we hate them. It's not like we think we want them to be healthy.
Yeah.
We want them to be well. But with what technology we have and what we understand about the future choices that they'll probably make and they have kept making.
Yeah, there's a reason why we have a psychological, kind of classification of a compulsion, a thing that is compulsory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is because we've discovered many, 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 many people throughout the study of human psychology who seem to be acting in compulsory ways where they're like, if I could do something else, I would, and I can't.
Yeah.
And they know how bad the thing that they're doing is, and they know how bad it makes them feel and how bad it makes other people feel, and they can't stop themselves from doing it.
Funny, you know, it might not even be that second thing, how bad it makes them feel. It mm-hmm. doesn't make them feel bad. That's
yeah.
why they do it.
Yeah, maybe it makes them feel great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my favorite example of this is Louis C.K. It's pedophiles.
Yeah.
Really. Louis C.K. did this incredible bit on SNL. He did his monologue on SNL for the 40th anniversary was, I think, just the most incredible monologue I've ever watched.
How dare you?
I know.
You're a piece of shit. You know,
it's before we all knew, right?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Whatever.
That's a whole bucket of worms.
Yeah, that's a whole.
We don't need to get into that. But regardless,
his latest special is so fucking
is
funny.
So
and I'll just
good.
Say it right here that I listened to it or I watched it. And it was amazing.
It was amazing.
I haven't laughed at anything that hard through the entire quarantine. Yeah.
So he goes on about how there used to be a child molester who lived on a street when he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And like when he was a kid, like nobody really thought anything of it. They were just like, yeah, that's where the pedophile lives. Like, don't go near his house. Don't talk to him and you'll be fine. And he was like going on about this pedophile. He was like, God, to be a pedophile is such a strange thing. It's the idea of wanting something that badly, because there is nothing in the world that is worse than being a known pedophile. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You could murder people. You could almost damn right be Hitler.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, we hate Hitler, but like that guy touched a kid.
Yeah.
Like, you know that, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's kill him. Anywho,
we don't even really want to kill him. We want to keep them alive and like torture them
yeah.
rest of their lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
We want to just like every day be like, you're a piece of shit.
Yes.
Like,
so anyway,
you know? Yeah.
and like you could go online and be like, God, I want to fucking kill that child molester. And no one would bat an eye. Everybody
yeah.
would be like, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I wouldn't do it personally, but you go right ahead if you feel
yeah,
like it,
uh-huh.
if you feel so inclined. And so to be a child molester, to be a pedophile is just so crazy. The idea of like wanting that for yourself, the risks are so high. And he compared it to his love for eating Mounds bars.
Mm-hmm.
He loves Mounds bars. He loves them so much. He can't do anything else while he's eating them. He can't read the paper. He can't look at his phone.
He knows that they're bad for him.
Yeah.
He knows that they're making him fat.
Sure.
But he just
God damn
can't.
It.
Oh.
They're so good.
Yeah.
I hate them personally. So
yeah, yeah.
I like think of, I don't really know that maybe salmon, well cooked
yeah.
salmon. Anyway, you know, he's like slapping his cheek. It's like, it's so,
Oh, damn good.
Coconut.
Yeah.
But if he found out tomorrow that eating Mounds bars was illegal, not only illegal, but would make him like the least likable person, the most hated person in society, he would stop. He has the capability. He would stop eating Mounds bars. The risk isn't, you know, worth the reward. And so that must mean that for pedophiles, knowing the risks that are associated with touching children, it's worth it. And like that must, like I can't comprehend it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sick.
Yeah.
Because my brain isn't like a pedophile's. I haven't had the experience of a pedophile and my chemistry in my head is not that of a pedophile.
Well, and we talked about this. It's kind of like, you know, the reason people relapse. And it's like people like you look at chronic relapsers who just go in and out of rehab and in and out of programs. And it's just kind of like they know everything there is to know about
yeah.
the dangers and about the downside to drug addiction and drug use. and they cannot stop themselves from going out and picking up again. And you look at it and just go like some of these people, you just go like, I guess you're just a lost cause. Because like, and the reason, there's a reason why the program is structured in a way where it tells people like, hey, look, don't think for one second that this isn't going to happen to you. Because there's going to be a day where you're looking at a drink and you're just going, oh my God, today's the day that I give up the 10 years of sobriety that I had. Yeah. And you can't believe that you're actually in this position, but here you are. And you're going, I'm about to drink this booze right now, knowing full well that I'm undoing years of hard work and all the things that I know that are going into this. Here I am making this decision. So is that kind of choice an argument for determinism or an argument against it? And I think it's very fine grain, because it could be in one hand, clearly compulsory, you are incapable of making another choice. And on the other hand, it could be evidence that in the face of all counter external forces, you are making a contrary choice. You are making a choice that goes against everything that you should be choosing to do. And so, I don't know.
So when I was a kid, I masturbated a lot, like from a very young age.
I started masturbating
and then I learned it was bad. And I learned it was against the word or the law of chastity.
And you stopped forever.
And I tried. It was this ongoing battle forever to not masturbate, not look at pornography, not do anything with girls. And I just couldn't. My sex drive was such that I...
It's such a losing battle.
Not for everybody, though.
For 99%.
You would be shocked how many boys in the church... I have friends. I have a brother who...
Don't buy it.
You just have to know him. Like, you have to know him. He's not in the church anymore. He has nothing to defend.
Yeah.
He's just like, he liked drugs. He would get into drugs.
Yeah.
But like, as far as sex and stuff, he's like, I just never felt super compelled to do it. Like, you know.
I think because I had a lot of friends who lied about it to me.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager, who were like, oh, I don't do that. And then later on, as adults were like, oh, I was doing it all the time.
Exactly.
And I'm like, oh, you fucking liar.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
you
the thing. I have friends that are like well into this point of their lives where it's like, oh no, they would tell the truth. Like, there's no reason for them to be lying. They're not Mormon anymore. Like, there's no, you know, if anything,
it's kind of like when people ask me if I'm gay and I'm like, you would know.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have no reason. I'm like, and it's not that like I'm like saying that I'm afraid of it, or that like, just like, if I would not be not fucking dudes.
In the community that you operate in, artistic community, to be gay.
I wouldn't be depriving myself of all the good sex.
There's that. I'm talking about like the social currency in the artistic realm of being gay. Oh, yeah. I would eat that up.
I wouldn't just continue being a straight white guy when I could be a gay guy.
Yeah.
Like, I know all the oppression and stuff like that, but like right now, I could really use that.
In the artistic field. Anywho.
Yeah. But again, I think that there could be a delineation made between compulsory behaviors and things that we really just are like, this is just in me.
But did I choose? Yeah, did I choose to have that high of a sex drive?
Nope.
Did my brother choose to have a low sex drive?
And again, I've been saying there's all kinds of external forces that we don't choose.
Yeah.
But then there's also the individual. So it's like there's all kinds of things where it's like there's compulsory behaviors.
But doesn't that make up the individual? Your chemistry?
Absolutely, it's part of it. Definitely, the nature and the culture definitely are contributing factors, and I think that. Thinking that that's where the buck stops is it's just a combination of nature and nurture.
Nurture and brain chemistry. Like, I feel like...
But the brain chemistry part is the part where I'm like, there's something in there.
Yeah.
There's something
I'll give
in
you
there
that
makes
you
that. You. And then,
and
then
we understand so little about it that I can't help but just think, it makes the choices that it's always going to make.
I think you said something like 15 minutes ago that I was like, that's a good... wrap up spot, because we could continue talking about this forever.
Literally.
But you basically said, you were like, it's a method of looking at the world, a how for me or a why for me that allows me to, that helps me be a nicer person, that helps me find comfort and gives me a purpose to things. And I think that's sort of true of whatever a person's why is, whatever the philosophy is they land on. I'm like, as long as it's helping you become a kinder, more empathetic, softer, more open person who's not actively hurting people with your ideas, as long as that's true, I'm all for you. Because so much of this stuff is like, we always have to settle on, I'm not going to be able to prove it to you.
No.
I'm not going to be able to actually quantify it. I don't have a devs machine. I don't have a machine capable of. Everyone watch devs. God damn it. It's so good.
So good.
It's so good.
Please.
Even with the spoilers that we said on here, if you haven't watched it, watch it.
Get at it.
It's so good because you were never not going to be spoiled because the universe is deterministic. So like, you are always going to hear this first and be inspired to watch it because you listen to this. And that's the way you're going to experience it. Go listen to it. But I think, yeah. With all this stuff, it's like my kind of ground rule for a person's philosophy or whatever their belief is like, as long as it's helping you, as long as it's useful in your life, I'm good with it. And it's not harming other people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree, you know. I really don't. I just am like, I like that idea of the triangle instead of just the duality.
Yeah, I need to look into that. I've never heard it either.
And yeah. Jordan was just kind of like, he's like, I was talking with Sam. He's like, I was talking with Sam Harris the other day, and Sam would say that it's definitely just a combination of external forces. And, you know, it's like you're born and then you don't choose where you're born and you don't choose, you know, who your parents are. And it's like you got all these external forces and that's kind of the constitution of who you are. But our stories would say that there's a self, a hero that's in there that can individuate and make his own choices. And like, but I was like, it's not just stories. Like, we tell the stories that way because maybe that's a reflection of what is, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I like that idea of like, why not that there's the three things rather than just the two things.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. The brain chemistry.
And it just
somewhere
gave me a
there.
Chance to
somewhere
imitate Jordan
there.
Peterson again.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Oh, geez.
I really have to pee.
Yeah, all right, Kay. Thank you. There's a moment in the third Matrix movie where Agent Smith is handily defeating the protagonist Neo in an epic battle royale, and he frustratedly asks him why he hasn't given up yet. Why, in the face of such overwhelming evidence that he has no chance of victory, does he continue to get up and fight? Why doesn't he just give in and accept the inevitable outcome of this conflict? He has more than enough information to understand that continuing to fight is futile, yet he continues to the bafflement of his foe, who can't help but ask, why? Why do you persist? Neo's answer to this question used to bug me. It seemed so corny and glib, like the writers couldn't think of anything better to say. But watching the movie recently through the lens of this philosophical thought bubble, I found it to be the perfect answer. The only answer. He replies simply, because I choose to. I told you we'd come back to the Matrix and why I think agents were called agents specifically and intentionally by the writers, and here we are. Basically, I think that these movies are actually all about the philosophical debate between determinists and free will believers. So free will believers think humans are like the agents in the Matrix movies, essentially. Agents are beings who, within the bounds of certain immutable physical laws, are able to change things and rearrange their immediate reality by making choices, and we'll put choices in quotes. In the Matrix movies, this is taken a step further because the humans are able to make actual choices, and we'll take the quotes off there, choices that even the agents couldn't make. The humans have like extra special choice powers or something. The agents were only able to rearrange things because they were programmed with that ability.
It was one of their essential functions as gatekeepers of the Matrix, while the humans were able to change things because their programming came from some deeper cosmic divine spark that couldn't be quantified in code. Thus the name of the villain, Agent Smith, or Agents Myth, as in the agency that the agents possess is a myth. That's right, this is now a full-blown fan theory podcast. But the point is that in that moment in the third movie, the conflict of all three films finally comes to a head. Smith has been determined since the first film that the finality of the conflict between him and Neo is an inevitability that is certain, from which there is no escape, no other possible routes, no possible deviation. Yet throughout the three movies, Neo is constantly proving him wrong and behaving in ways that are completely unpredictable and counter to the logical line of cause and effect that he understands to be the immutable laws of the universe. Whether it's choosing to stand and fight in the train station, coming back to life in the hallway, or finally choosing to stand and fight in the rain, even when Smith has all but conquered the entire Matrix itself, Neo is constantly deviating from the clear causal pathway in front of him. It never makes sense to Smith because to Smith there is no reality outside of hard determinism. Outcomes are fixed realities. There is no changing the future just as there is no changing the past. It is all simply inevitable. And this is why Neo baffles him. Because to Neo, nothing is inevitable. Neo is free to behave however he wishes. This isn't something he can prove, but it's something he believes. He believes that all humans are capable of this ability to behave however they choose. It's just a far simpler concept for him to grasp because he's like magic or something. And yeah, that magic comes from the programming designed by the Architect and the Oracle, but there's the third component, the component programs like Smith and the Architect don't understand. The human component. And that's where I think I land on this. I think humans are programmed. I think we make choices all the time due to causes outside of our sphere of influence or control. I think we unconsciously obey deterministic tram lines all the time, but I also think that quite often we choose to disobey our programming. And I think that it is this capacity for disobedience, this ability to deviate from the path and choose to create our own, that might just be the secret to understanding the human brain. Or I might just be totally talking out my ass. I honestly don't know. People Pleaser is written, produced, edited, hosted by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. The show is mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Go to marmalademusicslc.com, let them know that you listen to People Pleaser, and Chris will do your first project for 20% off. Hit Chris up today for your project. You can hear more of my projects at austin-archer.com or by looking up Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music. I've got a new single out that was also mixed and mastered by Chrissy Bear himself. It's called New Groove. It's part of an album that I'm releasing soon. Go listen to New Groove. Let me know what you think about it. Go to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating and a review, and I'll read that review on the show and review you back. God, I said it before, but I'll say it again. It feels great to be back. Love you guys, and I'll see you next week. Okay, stay safe. Bye.